Welcome, Curious Minds, to the Deep Dive. Today we're navigating a truly dynamic sector that's not just about flights, but really about the very infrastructure underpinning these huge global economic shifts.
Yeah, it's fascinating stuff.
Did you know that Mexico's aviation market moved a record 118.1 million passengers back in 2023?
Wow, 118 million.
Yeah, that's a powerful 10.6% jump just year over year, and it's, you know, a really compelling signal of much larger trends at play here.
It's a striking figure, isn't it? I mean, when we think about the mechanics of global supply chains and economic growth, our minds often go straight to massive cargo ships or, you know, extensive rail network.
Right, the big visible stuff.
Exactly. But air travel, both for people and importantly for high-value goods, it's an indispensable artery. What's particularly compelling here is how these big macro global forces are profoundly impacting very specific, very local infrastructure.
That's precisely the story we want to unpack for you today. For this deep dive, we're turning our attention to Grupo Aeroportuario del Centro Norte, widely known by its ticker OMAB. O-M-A-B.
O-M-A-B.
And this isn't just an analysis of an airline company. It's really an exploration of critical infrastructure, a fascinating economic development narrative, and a look at how a strategically positioned company can truly leverage these enormous economic shifts.
And our insights for today, they're drawing from a pretty comprehensive stack of sources. We've got detailed investment research, financial reports, rigorous industry analyses, the works.
So thoroughly researched.
Absolutely. And our mission really is to distill the core investment thesis for OMAB, helping you understand its unique position. It sits right at the nexus of some incredibly powerful economic tailwinds, but also, as we'll definitely explore, some very significant and frankly material risks.
And when we talk about those powerful tailwinds, we're zeroing in on two major forces. First, this transformative nearshoring phenomenon, which is, I mean, literally reshaping manufacturing maps globally.
It's a huge buzzword, but it's real.
And second, the critical rebound in air travel that came hot on the heels of a major regulatory upgrade for Mexico. But to give you the full balanced picture, we absolutely have to delve into the substantial risks, especially those tied to the regulatory environment, that truly define OMAB's journey. So are you ready to dive deep?
Let's do it. Let's maybe start by painting a broader picture of the Mexican aviation market itself. What we've seen, especially post-pandemic, is a truly powerful rebound.
Right.
But this isn't just a cyclical recovery, you know, the kind you might expect after any downturn. This feels more like a sustained period of structural growth, indicating some pretty fundamental shifts in demand.
Yeah, it's more than just a bounce back. It feels like a genuine ascent. The numbers really tell a compelling story. Yeah. That record, 118.1 million passengers in 2023, a significant 10.6% increase from the prior year.
Impressive growth.
And what's even more interesting, I think, is that this growth isn't really slowing down. It seems to be continuing strongly right into 2025. That kind of momentum suggests something deeper is going on than just a return to normal travel patterns.
It does. And if we look at the market's trajectory, the total value, well, estimates put it somewhere between, say, USD 7.64 billion and USD 7.96 billion just for 2024.
Okay, so a sizable market already.
Right. But the real story is in the forecast. We're seeing some pretty ambitious projections suggesting this market could expand at a compound annual growth rate, a CAGR, ranging anywhere from 4.6% up to an impressive 8.2% over the next decade.
Wow. 8.2% CAGR.
Potentially, yeah. Imagine it could reach between USD 12.48 billion and maybe even USD 16.8 billion by 2033, 2034. That's a substantial runway for continued expansion.
So what's fueling this kind of sustained growth? Let's break it down. Domestically, how are everyday Mexicans contributing to this surge?
Okay, domestically, a major driver is definitely the expansion of Mexico's middle class. As disposable incomes have been steadily rising, you're seeing more and more people choosing air travel over traditional, often very long-distance ground transportation.
Makes sense. Faster, often more convenient if you can afford it.
Exactly. And this trend has been significantly amplified by the proliferation and, importantly, the accessibility of low-cost carriers, the LCCs. They've, in essence, democratized flying within the country, making it a genuinely affordable option for a much broader segment of the population.
And on the international side, Mexico's always been a major draw for tourists, obviously, but what's the enduring international driver here? Is it just tourism?
Well, internationally, Mexico's enduring status as a premier global tourism destination plays a fundamental role, no doubt about it. The consistent flow of travelers, particularly from the United States and Canada, provides a very resilient and robust demand base.
Right, that U.S.-Canada connection is huge.
It is. And the steady international traffic forms a foundational element of the sector's stability, providing a kind of counterbalance to any potential fluctuations in the domestic market.
But this isn't just about vacationers and leisure travel, is it? I mean, the aviation sector's broader economic impact on Mexico seems quite profound when you look at the numbers.
Oh, it truly is foundational to the national economy. The sector directly and indirectly supports an astounding 1.8 million jobs across Mexico.
1.8 million jobs. That's incredible.
It is. And collectively, it contributes a total of USD 88.3 billion to the nation's GDP. These figures really underscore its vital importance, not just as a transportation network, but as a significant engine for employment and overall economic output.
Okay, this brings us to a really critical secular tailwind, one that's reshaping more than just travel patterns, this near-shoring phenomenon. We hear that term thrown around a lot, but what exactly does it mean in the context of Mexico and its airports, particularly OMAP?
Right, near-shoring. For Mexico, it's essentially the strategic relocation of manufacturing and supply chain operations, primarily from Asia, much closer to the massive U.S. consumer market.
Okay.
And this isn't just a strategic buzzword anymore. It's driving tangible, significant foreign direct investment, or FDI. Directly into Mexico's industrial states. We're talking new factories, expanded production lines, complex logistics hubs being built out.
And this is where OMAV's unique footprint truly becomes its superpower, isn't it? Because many of these industrial hubs are precisely where OMAD has its major airports.
Exactly. A large concentration of these key industrial states are in Mexico's northern and central regions, which is precisely OMAV's territory, where they have a dominant presence. This industrial renaissance isn't just about building factories. It's fueling an immense demand for high-yield business travel, air cargo, and sophisticated logistics services.
So different kinds of demand than just tourism.
Very different. And this makes nearshoring a durable, long-term growth driver that is fundamentally distinct from the more cyclical nature of tourism. For OMAB, it's a truly strategic fit, positioning them right at the heart of this economic transformation.
And to support all this anticipated growth, Mexico isn't just sitting back and hoping for the best. There's a substantial national infrastructure investment program underway, right? What does that actually look like?
It's a significant commitment from the government and private sector. We're talking about MXN, $134 billion. That's Mexican pesos, slated for airport modernization and expansion projects just between 2025 and 2030.
134 billion pesos, that's a lot of investment.
It is. And what's particularly important for you, our listener, to understand is the public-private partnership model here. Private airport groups, including OMAB, are expected to fund the vast majority of this. They're contributing around MXN 102.59 billion.
Wow, so the private operators are footing most of the bill.
Primarily, yes.
Yeah.
This arrangement not only leverages private capital for what's essentially public good upgraded infrastructure, but it also secures the long-term growth trajectory of these critical assets for the operators themselves.
Okay, so the economic winds are definitely shifting in Mexico's favor in many ways, but there was also a major regulatory storm that needed to clear before things could really take off, especially transborder travel. Let's talk about the FAA Category 1 upgrade. That sounds like a truly pivotal moment for Mexican aviation. What exactly happened and why was it so significant?
Yeah, this was a monumental development. The U.S. Federal Aviation Administration, the FAA, officially reinstated Mexico's Category 1 aviation safety rating back in September 2023.
Okay, September 23.
Right. And to truly grasp its importance, you need to recall the period leading up to it. Mexico had been under a Category 2 downgrade for a painful 28 months, stretching all the way from May 2021 right through to September 2023.
28 months. So for nearly 2.5 years, Mexican airlines were essentially stuck in the departure lounge when it came to expanding their flights into the U.S. What was the tangible impact of that kind of restriction?
Oh, the impact was profound. During that entire 28-month period, Mexican-domiciled airlines were completely barred from adding any new routes to the U.S. or expanding their critical code share agreements with their U.S. partners.
So no new flights, no new partnerships.
Exactly. And this wasn't a minor setback. It severely stifled their growth in what is arguably the world's most lucrative international country market for air travel, especially for Mexico. Estimates suggest the Mexican industry collectively lost over USD $1 billion during that downgrade period.
$1 billion in lost opportunity. Just staggering, really.
It really is.
So when that Category 1 status was finally reinstated in September 2023, What was the immediate fallout? What did we actually see happen on the ground, so to speak?
It was like a dam breaking. The reinstatement immediately unleashed this huge wave of pent-up growth potential. In the mere weeks following the announcement, Mexican airlines like Aeromexico and Viva Aerobus announced more than 25 new routes to U.S. destinations.
Just weeks after. Wow.
Yeah, they were clearly ready to go. And this directly translates into significantly increased aeronautical think landing fees, passenger fees, and non-aeronautical think retail, parking revenue opportunities for airport operators like OMAB. It's driven by higher flight frequencies, new destinations being served, and of course, a surge in passenger volumes on those routes.
And it sounds like this also reset the competitive playing field a bit, didn't it? If Mexican airlines couldn't expand for 2 years, did U.S. carriers sort of step in to fill that void during that time?
They absolutely did. It was a logical competitive response. During the downgrade period, U.S. carriers aggressively expanded their capacity to Mexico, naturally capturing a larger share of that valuable transporter market.
Makes sense.
So the Category 1 upgrade now empowers Mexican airlines to rebalance this dynamic. They can finally deploy new aircraft on these routes, reclaim some of that lost market share, and interestingly, this renewed competition is actually expected to stimulate overall market growth. It benefits all the airport operators in the region, including OMAB, because it just brings more activity overall.
So this isn't just a sort of one-off surge then, but potentially something that provides a more continuous boost to the market going forward.
That's exactly right. It's not just a momentary bump. We anticipate this reinstatement to be a catalyst for a multi-year phase of network expansion and capacity growth in that absolutely critical U.S.-Mexico corridor. This provides a sustained tailwind for passenger traffic through the medium term, offering a consistent and reliable boost to operators like OMAP.
That paints a very clear picture of the market's positive momentum and these key tailwinds. Now let's zoom out a bit and look at the broader competitive landscape within the Mexican airport sector itself. It's not exactly an open market, is it? It sounds more structured.
Oh, far from it. The Mexican airport sector operates as an effective oligopoly. It's dominated by three main publicly traded privatized airport groups. OMAB, the one we're focusing on, Grupo Aeroportuario del Sureste, usually known as HAUR, and Grupo Aeroportuario del Pacifico, or GAP.
OMAB, ASUR, and GAP, the big three.
Exactly. And this structure creates formidable barriers to entry. You can't just decide to build and run a major airport. It essentially grants each operator a quasi-monopoly within its specific regional footprint.
Okay, so if they're not directly competing for the same passengers in the exact same cities, how do their portfolios differ? What makes OMAB's position unique compared to ASUR and JP?
Yeah, each of the three has a really distinct geographic and strategic focus. OMAB, as we've highlighted, manages 13 airports predominantly in Mexico's central and northern regions. Its portfolio is uniquely weighted toward industrial, manufacturing, and key business centers, with Monterrey International Airport, MTY, as its undisputed anchor asset.
Right, Monterrey being the big industrial hub.
Precisely. And this positioning truly makes OMAB the primary, most direct beneficiary of that massive nearshoring trend we discussed earlier.
And what about its peers, ASUR and GAP? How do their portfolios stack up in comparison? Where do they operate?
Okay, so ASUR, for instance, operates 9 airports, but they're concentrated in southeastern Mexico. Their portfolio is heavily dominated by Cancun International Airport, CUN, which is, as you probably know, Mexico's busiest airport for international passengers.
Right, Cancun is all about tourism.
Exactly. So ASUR's business is significantly leveraged to international tourism and leisure travel. They've also diversified internationally, operating airports in Puerto Rico and Colombia.
Interesting. And GAP.
GAP, on the other hand, has a more kind of hybrid portfolio. They operate 12 airports across Mexico's Pacific and central regions. They serve both major business hubs like Guadalajara and Tijuana being very important for cross-border traffic, as well as premier tourist destinations like Los Cabos and Puerto Vallarta.
So a mix of business and leisure for GAP.
And a real mix. And GAP also has international operations, managing 2 airports over in Jamaica.
So while they're all airport operators in Mexico, their underlying revenue drivers and exposure to different segments of the economy can be quite distinct. You know, given these different focuses, what makes OMAB's bet on nearshoring maybe a stronger or weaker play compared to, say, ASUR's heavy reliance on tourism?
That's a crucial question, right? OMAB's nearshoring focus brings with it a demand for typically high-yield business travel and essential air cargo, which tends to be less cyclical than leisure tourism.
Okay, less volatile maybe.
Potentially, yes. It's driven more by multi-year foreign direct investment cycles. decisions made by large corporations rather than just seasonal travel trends or consumer sentiment, this can make its growth drivers potentially more durable and predictable over the long run.
But tourism can boom, right?
Oh, absolutely. Tourism-heavy airports like Acer's Cancun benefit enormously from global leisure trends, and when those trends are strong, they can offer explosive, really high growth. The trade-off is often that stability versus higher but potentially more volatile growth profile. OMAB's advantage, its unique selling proposition, if you will, is its concentration in those industrial heartlands, giving it a unique structural tailwind directly from these manufacturing shifts.
And the rise of low-cost carriers, you mentioned them earlier, how have they influenced the growth of all three groups, regardless of their different strategic focuses?
Yeah, the expansion of LCCs like Volaris and Viva Aerobus has been a genuine game changer for all three of these groups. They've effectively democratized air travel across Mexico, making it far more accessible and affordable for a much broader segment of the population.
Bringing flying to the masses, essentially.
Absolutely. And this has stimulated immense domestic demand, consistently feeding traffic into the various hub airports managed by OMAB, Acer, and GIP. It acts as a broad and significant tailwind for the entire sector, lifting all boats, so to speak.
We've established that OMAB operates under these long-term concession agreements, which on the surface sound like a really solid foundation. But you hinted earlier that this seemingly stable system has a significant wrinkle, a major risk. Let's talk about the regulatory framework. What's the foundation and where does that big risk come in?
Okay, the foundation is indeed robust, historically speaking. The Mexican airport model is built upon these long-term concession agreements. They were granted by the government way back in the late 1990s during the privatization process.
Right, when they were privatized.
Exactly. And these concessions provide operators, including OMAB, with exclusive rights to manage and develop their airports for a hefty 50-year term with potential for extension beyond that. This long-term exclusive framework creates a truly powerful economic moat, essentially establishing regional monopolies with incredibly high barriers to entry.
So a strong economic moat based on those 50-year deals, how do they actually generate revenue under this concession model? Is it all tightly controlled by the government?
Well, it operates under what's called a dual-till regulatory system.
Mm-hmm.
So there are two main buckets of revenue. The first is regulated aeronautical revenues. These are things like the passenger usage fees, known universally as TUA, and landing charges for the airlines. These are regulated.
Okay.
Their maximum rate is determined every 5 years as part of something called a Master Development Plan, or MDP. This MDP is negotiated directly with the government. And crucially, this MDP also includes binding capital expenditure commitments from the airport operators, ensuring the infrastructure gets modernized. This part provides predictability and a clear framework for investment.
Okay, so that's one till, the regulated one. What about the other till?
The second, and increasingly important, till is unregulated. This is where non-aeronautical revenues come in. These are derived from all the commercial activities you see at an airport, the retail shops, the food and beverage outlets, parking, advertising, lounges, things like that.
Right, the stuff you spend money on while waiting for your flight.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
And these revenues are not regulated. This allows operators like OMAMA to capture the full upside from their commercial initiatives, strategic innovations, and market demand. This is where they have a lot more flexibility to drive growth and margins.
That sounds like a fairly balanced and, you know, reasonably transparent system on paper. But this is where the significant risk you mentioned earlier really comes into play. What actually happened in October 2023 that fundamentally shifted this seemingly stable framework?
That's the absolute critical point, and it's precisely why regulatory and political risk looms so large over this sector now. Despite this structured nature, the Mexican government demonstrated a willingness to change established agreements quite abruptly. In October 2023, they unilaterally amended the concession terms.
Unilaterally, meaning without negotiation.
That's how it was perceived, yes.
Yeah.
They increased the fee paid by operators on their gross revenues from 5% up to 9%. And they also modified the basis for how certain tariff calculations were made.
So they just changed the rules mid-game, essentially increasing the government's take. That sounds like a major blow to investor confidence, especially for long-term infrastructure assets.
It absolutely was. This action was widely perceived by credit rating agencies, by investors, by analysts as arbitrary. It fundamentally altered the sector's risk profile because it showcased the government's willingness to unilaterally change established agreements, agreements that were supposed to be stable for decades. This introduced a significant level of political uncertainty that frankly was not previously fully priced into these assets.
So what does this actually mean for anyone looking at OMAP today, or ACER, or a GAP for that matter? How does this unilateral action impact the perception and valuation of these assets going forward?
It means that any credible long-term valuation of Exxon Airport operators must now incorporate a higher country risk premium. You simply have to account for the very real potential for future adverse regulatory actions. This isn't just a theoretical what-if concern anymore, it's a demonstrated reality. And this represents a material shift in how these typically stable, almost utility-like, monopolistic infrastructure assets are viewed by the investment community.
That's a crucial point to understand, that lingering regulatory shadow. Okay, let's transition now to a deeper look at OMAP itself, focusing on its specific strategic footprint and how its particular portfolio of airports gives it that central northern corridor advantage you mentioned.
Right. OMAP's portfolio of 13 airports is quite ingeniously concentrated, geographically speaking. Okay. They are strategically located across 9 states, all situated within the economic engine of central and northern Mexico.
Okay, so not scattered randomly.
No, this deliberate geographic focus isn't accidental at all. It provides a distinct competitive advantage by aligning OMAP's assets directly with the nation's most powerful industrial and logistical growth trends, which, of course, ties directly back into that whole nearshoring story we keep talking about.
So they are literally sitting in the sweet spot geographically for that nearshoring phenomenon. And Monterrey International Airport, MTY, that's their crown jewel, isn't it? The
right.
Big one.
Absolutely. Monterrey International Airport is the undeniable cornerstone of their entire portfolio. It serves Mexico's third largest metropolitan area, a major industrial powerhouse, and it acts as a vital hub for international trade and manufacturing. Monterrey is a primary destination, maybe the primary destination, for foreign direct investment related to nearshoring.
Makes sense.
Which makes MTY the principal driver of OMAP's passenger traffic growth and consequently its overall revenue growth. It's an incredibly strategic asset for them.
But their portfolio isn't just Monterrey. You said 13 airports. There's a broader diversification at play. How does that intelligent diversification benefit them beyond just Monterrey?
Well, the diversification is intelligent because it plays into multiple aspects of the Mexican economy, giving them different exposures. Beyond Monterrey, they have airports in major industrial and border hubs like Ciudad Juarez, Reynosa, Chihuahua, and San Luis Potosi.
Okay, key manufacturing and border cities.
Exactly. These are located right in key manufacturing clusters and along critical trade corridors with the United States, so they benefit directly from North American supply chain integration and trade flows. Then you have airports like Acapulco, Mazatlan, and Zihuatanejo, which provide exposure to leisure and tourism.
The beach destinations.
Right. This offers diversification from the industrial cycle, but it also exposes them to tourism volatility and, as we unfortunately saw recently, natural disaster risks. Hurricane Otis's impact on Acapulco was a stark reminder of that vulnerability.
Yeah, that was devastating for Acapulco.
It was. And finally, they have airports in important regional centers like Culiacan, Durango, and Tampico. These serve as essential links for regional business and commerce within Mexico.
So the overall insight here, it seems, is that OMAP isn't just an airport operator in the traditional sense. It's rapidly becoming a direct play on Mexico's industrial supply chain shift. And it's generating potentially high-margin revenue from a completely different source than industrial real estate. Is that maybe the most important takeaway for our listeners about its portfolio?
Precisely. I think that's the key takeaway. OMAP's unique portfolio composition makes it the most direct public market vehicle, arguably, for investors seeking exposure to Mexico's burgeoning industrial renaissance. It's not just about counting passengers anymore. It's about the full ecosystem of trade, manufacturing, logistics, and the business travel that nearshoring inevitably brings with it.
That's a very clear picture of their strategic advantage. Now, let's break down their actual revenue engine. You mentioned that dual stream or dual till model earlier. How does that balance between the regulated aeronautical income and that high growth, unregulated, non-aeronautical income actually play out in their financials?
Yeah, OMAP's revenue engine is truly designed with those two strains working in tandem, but with different strategic roles. While aeronautical income forms the predictable regulated base, the real strategic focus for margin expansion and overall value creation is increasingly shifting towards the high-growth, unregulated, non-aeronautical income side.
Okay, let's start with the aeronautical side first, the regulated part. What's included in that segment and how significant is it?
Okay, this segment typically comprises the largest portion of their total revenues, historically. It includes all those fees directly related to aircraft and passenger processing. The big one is the passenger usage fees, the TUAs we mentioned, but it also includes landing and aircraft parking fees paid by airlines and charges for using the jetways.
Got it. Standard airport charges.
Pretty standard stuff. These revenues are directly tied to passenger and cargo volumes and, as we know, are regulated under that 5-year Master Development Plan framework. Just to give you a sense of scale, in the first quarter of 2025, their aeronautical revenues showed pretty robust growth of 13.8%, which reflects both strong traffic recovery and some scheduled tariff adjustments allowed under the MDP.
Okay, so that's the stable, regulated foundation growing nicely. But then there's the non-aeronautical side, which you referred to earlier as the growth engine. Why is this segment so pivotal for OMAB's overall strategy?
This segment is pivotal because it's where OMAD can truly innovate, differentiate, and capture significant incremental value, and has been consistently outpacing aeronautical revenue growth. It's composed of three critical subsegments. First, you have your traditional commercial activities. Things like car parking revenue, the retail stores, food and beverage outlets, advertising space within the terminals, and the VIP lounges. This area has performed very strongly recently, with revenues growing almost 23%, 22.8% in Q1 2025. That's driven by new commercial openings, new shops, new restaurants, and increased passenger spending as foot traffic recovers and maybe stays longer in the terminal.
That makes sense, optimizing the typical airport experience for the passenger's wallet. But you mentioned a key differentiator within this non-aeronautical stream for OMAB. What is that again?
Right. The real differentiator, and where OMAB is arguably leading its peers, lies in their diversification activities. This is where OMAB directly capitalizes on a strategic location and, frankly, some real foresight. This includes the operation of two hotels directly linked to their airports, their own cargo handling services through OMAB Carga, and most notably, industrial real estate services.
Okay, the warehouses.
Exactly. They're leasing warehouses in this dedicated industrial park located right at the Monterey Airport. This subsegment is proving to be an incredibly powerful growth driver, with its revenues increasing 22% overall in Q1 2025. But here's the really compelling part. The industrial services component alone surged by an exceptional 56.4% in that quarter.
56% growth just from leasing industrial space at the airport. That's incredible.
It is. And this is the tangible financial benefit of that nearshoring trend flowing directly, like right to OMAB's bottom line. It's not theoretical, it's real cash flow.
That really highlights the direct link between that broader nearshoring trend and OMAB's specific financial performance.
Okay, what about the third subsegment of non-aero? The third one is what they call complementary activities. This primarily includes revenues from leasing space to various third-party service providers operating within the airport. Could be ground handling companies, maintenance providers, etc., and other access fees. So when you integrate all these elements, especially the rapid expansion of these non-aeronautical revenues, particularly the high-margin diversification activities like industrial real estate, it fundamentally enhances the quality and the resilience of OMAB's business model.
How so?
Well, it significantly reduces their sole reliance on passenger volumes, which can be cyclical, and provides a more diversified, higher quality, and ultimately more robust overall revenue stream.
That dual stream approach, particularly with that impressive non-aeronautical growth driven by things like the industrial park, sounds like a significant strength. Now let's talk about the concession mode again. How does that really solidify OMAB's competitive position beyond just having those exclusive operating rights?
Yeah, the concession mode is OMAB's foundational competitive advantage, no question. It stems directly from those long-term exclusive concessions they were granted back in 1998 to operate their 13 airports. Remember, these are 50-year terms. This effectively creates regional monopolies with extremely high barriers to entry.
Right. Hard to compete with that.
Exactly. What this means in practice is a captive market for their services. Airlines wanting to fly to Monterey, for example, and the passengers using that airport largely have no viable alternative. This grants OMAB significant pricing power within the regulated framework for aeronautical charges and immense flexibility in developing those non-aeronautical revenue streams we just talked about.
And what role does that Master Development Plan, the MDP, play in strengthening this moat over time? Is it just about spending money?
The MDP is actually central to maintaining and strengthening these concessions over the long term. It's a 5-year agreement negotiated with the Mexican government that mandates specific capital investment commitments from OMAB. For the current MDP, the one covering 2021-2025, it involves a committed investment of over MXN $14.5 billion. That's specifically focused on enhancing capacity, improving service quality, and boosting safety across their entire airport network.
So they have to invest to keep the concession valuable.
Exactly. In return for making these substantial pre-agreed investments, OMA retains the right to charge those regulated aeronautical tariffs. It ensures the continuous modernization of critical national infrastructure, which obviously benefits the country, while also providing OMA with a growing, regulated asset base from which to generate consistent, predictable returns. It's supposed to be a win-win, provided, of course, that the regulatory environment remains stable and predictable.
Right. Always that caveat now. And there was a significant partnership that further strengthened this moat, or at least OMAB's ability to operate within it, wasn't there? The VinCI Airports affiliation. Tell us about that.
Yes, that was a very significant development for OMAB. In December 2022, OMAB effectively became part of VinCI Airports. VinCI acquired a controlling stake and is, in fact, the world's leading private airport operator by number of airports managed.
The biggest in the world.
The biggest. This partnership is a material positive for OMAP. It provides them with unparalleled access to a global network of expertise in literally every facet of airport management, from commercial development strategies and sophisticated route planning with airlines to operational efficiency gains and even implementing best practices in corporate governance.
So bringing global best practices to OMAP's specific portfolio.
Precisely. You can anticipate this affiliation yielding tangible benefits in areas like attracting new airlines or routes, optimizing the layout and tenant mix of their commercial spaces to maximize revenue, and enhancing overall operational best practices using VinCI's global playbook. It should further solidify their competitive position and operational prowess over time.
Okay, let's transition now to the hard numbers, the financial performance and condition of OMAP. You mentioned earlier a remarkable story of resilience and growth. How did they navigate the severe downturn of the pandemic, and what did their recent financials tell us about their current health?
It's truly a testament to their resilience and, frankly, the underlying demand for travel in their markets. In 2020, right at the height of the COVID-19 pandemic shutdowns, OMAP saw its total revenues plunge by a significant 37.1%. A huge hit, obviously.
Yeah, tough year for everyone in travel.
Absolutely. However, they staged a remarkably robust recovery. By 2022, their passenger traffic had already surpassed pre-pandemic levels, increasing a remarkable 28.8% compared to 2021 and reaching 23.2 million passengers for the year.
So a strong bounce back relatively quickly. And that momentum really accelerated into 2023, making it a record year, you said.
Indeed. That momentum carried through and actually accelerated into 2023, which turned out to be a record-setting year across the board for OMAP. Full-year passenger traffic grew by another 15.6% to reach 26.8 million passengers.
Okay.
And this strong operational leverage translated directly into exceptional financial results. Aeronautical revenues increased by 27%. Non-aeronautical revenues grew by a healthy 18%, and their adjusted EBITDA, which is a crucial measure of core operating profitability, surged by 27.8% to reach a record MXN $9.1 billion.
And that high profitability, the EBITDA margin, seems to be a core characteristic of OMAP, doesn't it? Looking at the historicals, it's consistently high.
Absolutely. High profitability is a distinguishing hallmark of OMAP's financial profile. Their inherent operating leverage, meaning that a large portion of their costs are fixed, means that incremental revenue flows through to the bottom line at a very attractive rate. Their adjusted EBITDA margin reached an impressive 76.3% back in 2022 and expanded even further to a record 78.4% for the full year 2023.
78% margin. That's incredibly high for almost any business.
It really is. This level of profitability is among the highest in the global airport industry, truly underscoring the efficiency of their operations and, frankly, the very favorable economics embedded in their concession model, at least historically.
And this strong performance has continued, even into the most recent quarter. What are the latest figures telling us, say, for Q1 2025?
Yeah, the results for Q1 2025 continue to demonstrate robust strength across the board. Total passenger traffic increased 9.1% year over year. Total revenues, if you exclude the pass-through construction services component, grew 15.6%. Adjusted EBITDA increased by 16% to reach MXN $2.4 billion for the quarter, maintaining a very strong margin of 74.9%.
Still, mid-70s margin. Impressive.
Very. And consolidated net income for the quarter also grew strongly, up 19.7% to MXN $1.3 billion. It really shows consistent earnings power, even in what remains a pretty dynamic global environment.
Looking at the provided historical data table, we can clearly see total revenues recovering significantly from that 2020 dip, more than doubling by 2023. And those adjusted EBITDA margins consistently remaining in the mid to high 70s percentage range. That's remarkable consistency for an infrastructure business, isn't it?
It really is. The data clearly illustrates not just the robust recovery post-pandemic, but also OMAB's impressive ability to translate that passenger traffic growth into higher revenues and, crucially, maintain those exceptionally high profitability margins year after year. It speaks volumes about their operational efficiency and the inherent leverage in their business model.
And on the capital expenditure front, we see substantial investments being made, particularly a big jump to over 3.6 billion pesos in 2023. This signifies that commitment to future growth we talked about, even while they seem to be consistently paying out dividends.
Correct. Those capital expenditures are absolutely central to fulfilling their MDP commitments and preparing the infrastructure for future traffic growth. What's equally impressive, as you noted, is that despite these significant reinvestments back into the business, they've maintained a consistent dividend policy. This signals a strong commitment to shareholder returns alongside growth. For example, substantial cash dividends were paid out in 2022-2023, and another large one was approved for 2025, demonstrating that careful balance between reinvesting in the business and returning capital directly to shareholders.
That leads us nicely into cash flow generation and balance sheet strength. How robust is OAM financially? Can they comfortably fund these big investments and keep paying those dividends?
Well, OAM's business model is essentially engineered to generate substantial and remarkably consistent cash flow. Just in Q1 2025 alone, they generated MXN 1.9 billion in cash purely from their operating activities.
1.9 billion pesos in one quarter.
Yeah. This robust internal cash generation is absolutely crucial. It provides OMAB with the financial wherewithal to fund its extensive capital expenditure program, including those substantial investments mandated by the MDP, while simultaneously rewarding shareholders through those consistent dividends we just discussed.
So they're not heavily reliant on borrowing or external financing, which can sometimes be a risk, especially in emerging markets with fluctuating interest rates.
Not at all, actually. Well, the company maintains a very disciplined and notably conservative capital structure. As of the end of Q1 2025, their total debt stood at MXN 11.3 billion. Now, that might sound like a big number, but when you compare it to their earnings, it resulted in a very low net debt to last 12 months adjusted EBITDA ratio of just 1.0x.
Only 1x net debt to EBITDA. That's very low for infrastructure.
Extremely low. For a capital-intensive infrastructure business, especially one with highly predictable revenue streams like an airport, this represents a remarkably low level of leverage. This strong financial position provides OMAB with significant flexibility to pursue strategic initiatives, comfortably weather potential economic downturns, and access capital markets on very favorable terms if and when they might need to. Plus, their liquidity position is robust, with a healthy cash balance of MXN 2.3 billion sitting on the books at the end of March 2025.
Okay, very solid financially. What's the outlook for their growth drivers then? Looking ahead, what's going to propel them forward from here?
The outlook seems pretty well underpinned by several clearly defined growth drivers. Passenger traffic is anticipated to continue its expansion, fueled by the ongoing recovery in both domestic and international travel segments. That significant boost from the FAA Category 1 upgrade, opening up all those new U.S. routes, is a powerful medium-term catalyst.
Right, the unlocking effect.
Exactly. And the organic growth of those low-cost carriers within Mexico will also remain a major contributor, continuing to democratize air travel and stimulate demand domestically.
And those ongoing capital expenditure programs we saw in the numbers, they seem poised to directly translate into future revenue streams as capacity increases.
They are. OMB is right in the midst of a significant investment cycle as part of its current 2021-2025 Master Development Plan. These investments, particularly the major expansion projects happening at Monterrey Airport, are specifically designed to increase capacity, enhance service levels for passengers and airlines, and modernize the facilities overall. This isn't just spending money. It's strategically laying the groundwork for future traffic growth and enabling higher revenue generation down the line. They're essentially building out the capacity to meet that anticipated demand from nearshoring and general growth.
And the non-aeronautical growth, that growth engine you called it, that continues to be a top strategic priority for management.
Absolutely. Management has been very clear that they continue to prioritize the growth of their high-margin, non-aeronautical businesses. This includes constantly optimizing the commercial mix within the terminals, finding the right shops, the right restaurants. It involves enhancing the retail and food and beverage offerings based on passenger data. And critically, it includes further expanding its industrial park and cargo facilities at Monterrey. This is a deliberate and so far very successful strategy to further capitalize on that powerful nearshoring trend, turning a macroeconomic shift into tangible, high-margin revenue streams for OMAP. Turning now to the people leading the company, let's talk about Ricardo Dueñas-Espriu, OMAP CEO. What's his track record like, and how does his background and leadership maybe instill confidence in the company's future trajectory?
Sure.
Ricardo Dueñas-Espriu has been the CEO since November 2018, so that gives him, what, over 6 years at the helm now. His background seems exceptionally well-suited for this particular role. Before joining OMAP, he served as the CFO for the development of the ultimately canceled New Mexico City Airport project.
Ah, right, that huge project.
Exactly. And in that role, he was responsible for securing over $8 billion in financing, an absolute massive undertaking, showcasing real financial clout. He also spent time earlier in his career in J.P. Morgan's Emerging Markets Investment Banking Division over in London.
Okay, so deep finance and infrastructure background.
Right. This combination gives him a deep command of capital markets, complex project finance, and the often tricky nuances of stakeholder management, which are all absolutely vital skills for leading a large regulated infrastructure company like OMAP.
So he's definitely got the financial acumen and the relevant infrastructure experience on paper. How has he actually performed in his leadership role at OMAP, especially given the turbulence of recent years with the pandemic and regulatory changes?
Well, under his leadership, OMAP successfully navigated the severe downturn of the COVID-19 pandemic, which, as we know, was no small feat for any travel-related company. Not only did they survive that period, but they emerged to deliver those record levels of passenger traffic, revenue, and profitability we just discussed in 2023.
Pretty strong rebound under his watch then.
Definitely.
Yep.
His tenure has been marked by a very clear strategic focus on enhancing those non-aeronautical revenues and shrewdly leveraging the company's unique geographic footprint to capitalize on the nearshoring trend. The aggressive and, judging by the numbers, successful expansion of the industrial park at Monterey Airport is a direct testament to his strategic foresight and the team's execution capabilities. Mm. Overall, I'd say this track record of sound operational management and clear strategic value creation truly instills confidence in his ability to guide the company through its next phase of growth.
That's a strong endorsement for his leadership based on results. Now, how does OMAP actually approach its capital allocation? You mentioned dividends and CapEx. Do they tend to prioritize reinvestment back into the business, or are they more focused on returning cash directly to shareholders? Is there a clear policy?
Yeah, their capital allocation strategy seems characterized by a clear, disciplined, and frankly, very investor-friendly framework. It really appears to strike a deliberate balance between the necessity for substantial reinvestment in their long-life assets and a strong commitment to robust shareholder returns. Management has explicitly stated that their policy is generally to first fund their committed capital expenditures under the MDP and any other strategic investments that they believe will enhance long-term value. Then the plan is to distribute as much of the remaining free cash flow as possible back to shareholders, primarily in the form of dividends.
And has this commitment to shareholders actually been evident in their dividend history? Have they been consistent?
Absolutely. The numbers back it up. In 2023, OMAB distributed MXN 9.61 per share in dividends. More recently, at the April 2025 annual shareholders meeting, a substantial cash dividend payment totaling MXN 4.5 billion was approved for distribution. This clearly reinforces their shareholder-centric approach and provides investors with a degree of predictability regarding cash returns, which likely makes the stock quite attractive to income-oriented portfolios.
Okay, so they're returning significant cash but also reinvesting heavily, as we saw in the CapEx numbers. Are those reinvestments actually paying off? Are they creating tangible value for the company?
It certainly appears so. The other side of that capital allocation coin is the significant reinvestment back into the core business. OMAP is currently in a heavy capital expenditure cycle, as dictated by the MDP. These investments are being directed toward expanding terminal capacity, upgrading critical airfield infrastructure like runways and taxiways, and enhancing the commercial areas within the terminals.
And the returns.
Well, the high returns generated from past investments, particularly in that non-aeronautical segment we discussed, like that explosive 56% growth in industrial services revenue, strongly suggest that management has been very effective in deploying capital into value-accretive projects. They seem to be consistently generating returns well above their cost of capital, which is exactly what you want to see from reinvestment.
And finally, on the governance side, how has that partnership with Vinci Airports impacted their corporate governance structure? Has it truly brought a global standard to OMAP, as you suggested it might?
Yeah, the partnership with Vinci Airports, which became a strategic partner and controlling shareholder in December 2022, has indeed significantly enhanced OMAB's corporate governance structure by all accounts. As the world's leading private airport operator, Vinci brings not just capital, but a wealth of global experience, established operational best practices, and a sophisticated approach to governance and risk management.
Right, the expertise factor.
Exactly. This relationship is seen as a material positive for OMAB, providing access to a global knowledge base that can be leveraged to optimize everything from negotiating new routes with international airlines to figuring out the optimal layout and tenant mix for their commercial spaces to maximize revenue per passenger.
So it's not just about financial backing. It's very much about operational and strategic guidance as well. And has this led to noticeable changes at the board level?
It seems so. The company's board of directors currently has an average tenure of just 2.7 years. Which is quite low, and indicates a relatively recent period of significant renewal.
Interesting.
Now, while a shorter tenure can sometimes signal a lack of deep company-specific experience, in this context, it highly likely reflects the influence of that new strategic partnership with Vinci. It suggests a refreshment of the board intended to align it more closely with global standards and Vinci's strategic priorities. The presence of a world-class operator like Vinci on the board provides an additional layer of sophisticated oversight and strategic guidance, which should certainly be viewed favorably by minority shareholders.
Okay, so we've covered the powerful tailwinds like nearshoring and the FAA upgrade, the resilient business model with that growing non-aero segment, and the strong financials and experienced leadership. But, you know, even the strongest ship can hit an unexpected iceberg. What's the biggest threat to OMAB's seemingly clear sailing right now, and what are the other major risks investors should be aware of?
Yeah, you're right. No investment is without risk. And without a doubt, the most significant and, frankly, least predictable risk for OMAB and its peers in Mexico is regulatory and political risk.
The big one we discussed earlier.
Exactly. The Mexican government holds ultimate authority over these crucial concession agreements. And as we discussed, their demonstrated willingness to unilaterally increase that concession fee from 5% to 9% back in October 2023 serves as a stark and very recent reminder of this inherent risk. It's not theoretical anymore.
So it's not just a possibility lingering in the background, it's a demonstrated reality. What are the potential future adverse actions that could impact OMAB from a regulatory perspective?
Well, future adverse actions could unfortunately include further changes to the tariff setting formula, perhaps making it less favorable to the operators. It could involve the imposition of additional taxes or fees specifically targeting airports. Or, looking ahead, it could mean unfavorable terms being imposed during the negotiation of the next 5-year master development plan, the one that starts in 2026.
Right. The next MDP negotiation is key.
Absolutely. Any such actions could directly and materially impact OMAB's future revenue and profitability. And perhaps just as importantly, the perceived risk of such interventions, even if they don't happen, can lead to a persistent valuation discount for the entire sector, regardless of how well they perform operationally. It's a constant shadow hanging over these stocks now.
Okay, beyond that major government intervention risk, how sensitive is OMAB to broader macroeconomic shifts? How exposed are they to a recession, for example?
Well, airport traffic is inherently and intimately linked to the health of the broader economy. There's no escaping that. A significant recession in Mexico, or perhaps even more critically in the United States, which is its most important international market by far, would inevitably lead to a decline in both business and leisure travel.
Fewer flights, fewer passengers.
Exactly. That directly reduces passenger volumes and, consequently, aeronautical revenues. Now, while OMAB's focus on industrial hubs and that nearshoring trend provides some resilience, maybe more than its tourism-focused peers, a severe economic downturn would still curtail business travel and reduce cargo volumes significantly. It offers some defense, but certainly not complete immunity.
And what about the execution of those large capital projects we discussed earlier? Building out Monterrey, upgrading other airports. Is there a significant risk involved in just getting those done properly?
Absolutely. OMAB is undertaking a substantial capital expenditure program right now to expand capacity and modernize its facilities. Large-scale construction projects anywhere in the world are inherently subject to risks. You worry about cost overruns, construction delays due to unforeseen issues, and potential operational disruptions at the airport while work is ongoing.
Right. Building things is hard.
It is. And a failure to execute these complex projects on time and on budget could delay the realization of the expected revenue growth from that new capacity, and it could negatively impact the returns they earn on their invested capital. it's a major undertaking with inherent execution risk.
Then there's currency exposure, the classic emerging market risk, the Mexican peso versus the U.S. dollar. How does that factor into their risk profile?
Yeah, that's always a consideration.
Yep.
OMAB's revenues are generated almost entirely in Mexican pesos, the MXN. However, a portion of its capital expenditures, especially for specialized imported equipment like baggage systems or navigation aids, and potentially some of its debt may be denominated in U.S. dollars, USD. So a sharp and sustained depreciation of the Mexican peso against the U.S. dollar would directly increase the cost of that imported equipment needed for their construction projects. It would also raise the cost, in peso terms, of servicing any USD-denominated debt they might have. Both of those factors would act to compress their profit margins.
And given how important Monterrey is to their overall business, is there a concentration risk there? Are they too dependent on that one airport?
Yes, there is definitely a clear concentration risk. The company's overall financial performance is heavily dependent on its largest and most profitable single asset, which is Monterrey International Airport. Any event that disproportionately affects the economy of the Monterrey region, like a localized industrial downturn or even a flare-up in security issues, would likely have a material impact on OMAB's overall results, more so than if their traffic was evenly spread.
And dependency on airlines, too.
That's the other side of concentration risk. The company's growth is inherently linked to the financial health and the network strategies of a few key airline partners, particularly the dominant Mexican low-cost carriers, Volaris and Viva Aerobus, which drive a lot of their domestic traffic. Any significant financial distress or a major strategic shift, like drastically cutting routes by one of these major airline partners, could adversely affect traffic volumes across OMAB's entire network.
What about those unforeseen external shocks, the black swan events like pandemics or major natural disasters, the ones you just can't really predict or control?
Yeah, the airport industry, perhaps more than many others, is uniquely vulnerable to these kinds of external events that are completely beyond management's direct control. We saw this with the global pandemic, obviously, as devastatingly demonstrated in 2020, which led to severe and prolonged travel restrictions globally. Natural disasters, like the impact of Hurricane Otis on their Acapulco airport, can cause significant physical damage and long-term disruption to travel demand for a specific destination. And broader geopolitical events or security concerns can also abruptly alter travel patterns and significantly impact passenger confidence, leading to fewer bookings.
And lastly, in our increasingly digital and connected world, cybersecurity must be a lingering concern for large, complex operations like an airport group.
Indeed. It's a growing risk for almost every industry. As airport operations become increasingly digitized and interconnected from passenger processing to baggage handling to air traffic coordination, they naturally become more exposed to cybersecurity threats. OMAV themselves recently reported experiencing a cybersecurity incident, which just highlights the operational and reputational risks associated with data breaches or system disruptions.
Right, that could shut things down.
Potentially. A significant breach could lead not only to operational chaos, but also financial losses, regulatory fines, and, critically, a loss of confidence from passengers and airline partners. It's a non-trivial and constantly evolving risk that all modern infrastructure operators have to actively and continuously manage.
Okay, that's a very comprehensive overview of the risks, really outlining the potential challenges OMAV faces alongside those opportunities. Now, let's turn to the tricky part. How analysts might actually value a company like OMAV considering all these factors. What's the primary approach typically used?
Right. Valuation is always part art, part science, especially with these complexities. The valuation of OMAV is generally approached through a multifaceted framework, aiming to establish a reasonable range of potential intrinsic values under various assumptions. This analysis primarily relies on, first, a comparison with its direct peers comparable company analysis, and second, a detailed discounted cash flow or DCF model. Together, these provide a quantitative basis for assessing whether the company's current market price seems reasonable.
Okay, so starting with the comparable company analysis or comps, you mentioned Acer and GP are the closest peers. What do those comparisons typically tell us about OMAV's valuation relative to the others?
Yeah, Acer and GP are definitely the most relevant peers. They operate under the same fundamental regulatory framework in Mexico and are exposed to broadly similar macroeconomic trends, making for a direct and meaningful comparison. Historically, OMAV has sometimes traded at a valuation discount to these peers, particularly if you look at metrics like enterprise value to EBITDA.
Any reason why?
Well, this might have been due to its slightly smaller overall scale, or perhaps its higher concentration in business and domestic travel, which some investors might have seen as less exciting than the high-growth international tourism markets that dominate Azure's Cancun or GPS Los Cabos airports. However, that's where the narrative might be changing. The ongoing nearshoring trend provides a unique and powerful growth catalyst specifically for OMAP that may not be fully reflected in those purely historical valuation multiples anymore. The story is evolving.
Let's quickly review some of the key comparative metrics from the sources, maybe mid-2025 data. We see OMAP is the smallest in terms of market cap and revenue, roughly half the size of GP, for example, but all three show remarkably high EBITDA profitability, as you noted. What's most interesting or surprising to you in these direct comparisons?
What really stands out to me, despite the size difference, are the core valuation multiples themselves. If you look at enterprise value to last 12 months EBITDA, OMAP's multiple is actually relatively tight with its peers. It's around 10.5x compared to Acer, maybe a bit lower at 9.0x, and GP slightly higher at 10.7x.
So fairly similar EBITDA multiple.
Right. This suggests that the market, at least on this key metric, generally perceives similar overall risk growth profiles among them, despite their differing geographic focuses and exposures. However, when you look at the price-to-earnings, or PE ratio, there's much more dispersion. OMAP is around 21.6x, Acer is much lower at 14.8x, and GP is the highest at 24.4x.
That's a big range on PE. Why the difference?
That wider range could be due to several factors. Differing tax rates between the companies, variations in depreciation charges due to different asset ages or investment cycles, or other non-cash charges that impact reported net income much more significantly than they impact EBITDA. So EBITDA might be a cleaner comparison here.
And just a quick note on dividend yield. Acer's forward yield is listed as exceptionally high at 13.3% compared to OMAP's more typical 3.56% and GPay's 4.84%. That Acer number is a huge outlier. What's going on there?
It is, and that's exactly the kind of figure that would warrant deeper investigation before taking it at face value. An exceptionally high yield like Acer's can sometimes reflect a large, one-time special dividend payout that inflates the calculated forward yield based on past payments. Or, alternatively, it could signal that the market is actually factoring in specific concerns or risks for Acer that could lead to a lower future dividend payout, causing the current yield to appear artificially inflated relative to a sustainable level. It's definitely a point where a savvy investor would pause and ask, okay, why is this yield so much higher than its peers?
Good point. So comparable company analysis gives us a useful snapshot, a relative valuation. But for a stable cash generative infrastructure asset like OMAP, you mentioned a discounted cash flow, or DCF, analysis is often considered the primary valuation methodology. What are the key assumptions that typically go into building a DCF model for OMAP?
Right. DCF is really about valuing the company based on the present value of its expected future free cash flows. For our DCF model of OMAP, we typically use a 10-year explicit forecast horizon. That's long enough to fully capture the current 2021-2025 MDP investment cycle and the initial years of the subsequent cycle starting in 2026.
Okay, 10 years. What about revenue growth?
For revenue, we'd project healthy passenger traffic growth, generally in the mid-single digits annually, maybe 4-6%. That reflects a combination of expected macroeconomic growth in Mexico, the ongoing benefits from the nearshoring phenomena, and new route development stemming from that Category 1 upgrade. Crucially, though, non-aeronautical revenues are projected to grow at a faster clip, maybe 8-12% annually, driven by the company's continued execution on its commercial and diversification strategy, especially capitalizing on that industrial services opportunity at Monterrey.
And how do profitability assumptions and those big capital expenditures factor into that model?
Adjusted EBITDA margins are forecast to remain robust, likely staying consistently in the high 70s or maybe low to mid 70s range, say 72-76%, perhaps moderating slightly from the absolute peak levels we saw in 2023 as operating costs normalize somewhat and the company makes necessary investments in service quality. Capital expenditures, the CapEx, are modeled primarily based on the company's publicly disclosed commitments under the current MDP through 2025. Followed by a more normalized level of investment, perhaps calculated as a percentage of revenue, in the later years of the forecast period.
Okay, that covers the cash inflows and outflows. What about the discount rate used to bring those future cash flows back to today's value, the WACC? And then how do you account for the value of the business beyond that explicit 10-year forecast, the terminal value?
Those are two absolutely critical assumptions in any DCF. The weighted average cost of capital, or WACC, is a discount rate we use. Our baseline WACC is calculated using the Standard Capital Asset Pricing Model, or CAPM, which incorporates things like the risk-free rate, market risk premium, and the company's beta. Importantly, it also includes a specific country risk premium added for Mexico.
Adjusting for that regulatory risk we talked about?
Exactly. That baseline WACC is then further sensitized or adjusted upwards to reflect that heightened regulatory risk environment we discussed earlier. A range for the WACC, perhaps from 9.5% on the low end up to 11.0% on the high end, is generally considered appropriate for running different scenarios and sensitivity analyses.
And the terminal value. How do you estimate the value way out in the future?
For the terminal value, which captures the value of the business beyond our explicit 10-year forecast period, it's typically calculated using a perpetual growth rate methodology. We might assume a long-term growth rate of, say, 2.5%, reflecting expectations for long-term nominal GDP growth in Mexico.
Yeah.
This perpetuity value is then cross-checked for reasonableness using an exit multiple approach, essentially asking, what EBITDA multiple would a buyer likely pay for this mature business in year 10 based on historical trading ranges of similar mature airport operators globally?
I imagine, given all the variables and risks we've discussed, the regulatory uncertainty, macroeconomic factors, nearshoring upside, a single DCF point estimate isn't really enough, is it? You really need to explore a range of potential outcomes through scenarios.
That's exactly right. A single point estimate from a DCF model can be highly misleading, almost dangerously precise, given the inherent uncertainties involved in forecasting 10 years into the future. Therefore, the valuation is always best presented as a range based on different plausible scenarios. This is usually complemented by sensitivity analysis tables to highlight which assumptions have the most significant impact on the final valuation.
So, what does a typical base case scenario for OMAB look like under your DCF analysis? What are the core assumptions there?
Okay, our base case scenario generally assumes passenger traffic growth that's broadly in line with consensus long-term industry forecasts for Mexico, maybe around 5% annually. It assumes moderate continued success in their non-aeronautical expansion strategy. And critically, it assumes a relatively stable regulatory environment going forward, meaning no major negative surprises beyond the fee increase that already happened in 2023. It represents the most probable scenario if things continue largely as expected based on current trends and policies.
And what about the optimistic side, the bull case? What really needs to go right for OMAB to truly outperform expectations and unlock significant shareholder value according to the model?
The bull case models a much more aggressive passenger growth scenario, perhaps pushing up towards 7-8% annually. This would likely be driven by an accelerated nearshoring boom, really exceeding current expectations in terms of investment and associated travel. It also assumes continued strong margin expansion resulting from outperformance in those non-aeronautical initiatives, especially the industrial park. And crucially, the bull case often assumes a favorable outcome in the next MDP negotiation cycle, one that potentially leads to a lower perceived regulatory risk and consequently allows for a lower WACC to be used in the valuation, which directly increases the calculated intrinsic value.
And on the flip side, the pessimistic view, the bear case, where do things go wrong in that scenario that could significantly impair OMAB's value?
The bear case typically incorporates a significant macroeconomic slowdown or even a recession, either in the U.S. or Mexico or both. This would lead to low, flat, or even negative passenger traffic growth, maybe in the 0-2% range for a period. This scenario also explicitly models the impact of another potential adverse regulatory action, for example, a further increase in concession fees, or maybe the imposition of direct price controls on passenger fees, TUAs. Such an event would be reflected in the model through lower long-term margin assumptions and definitely a higher WACC due to the increased risk perception severely impacting the valuation outcome.
And you mentioned the sensitivity matrix earlier. What's its main purpose for you, our listener, trying to understand the valuation range?
Right. The sensitivity matrix is a really powerful visual tool.
Yeah.
It helps illustrate the potential range of implied equity values per share based on simultaneous changes in the two most critical long-term assumptions in the DCF, usually the WACC, the discount rate, and the perpetual growth rate used in the terminal value calculation. By showing how the valuation shifts sometimes dramatically across different combinations of these inputs, maybe ranging from low WACC high growth to high WACC low growth, it helps us understand the directional impact on valuation as these key variables move. It provides a much more nuanced understanding of the potential outcomes and highlights where the greatest leverage or risk lies within the valuation model.
Okay, that makes sense. So bringing all this analysis together, the market, the company, the financials, the risks, the valuation, What does the bull case for OMAB truly hinge on? What absolutely needs to go right for this investment thesis to truly outperform expectations?
Right, for the OMAB investment thesis to genuinely outperform, to hit that bull case scenario, several key factors really need to align perfectly, leveraging the company's unique strategic positioning and its proven operational strengths. The primary catalyst, I think, has to be an acceleration of that nearshoring trend, really going beyond what's currently baked into expectations.
So even faster growth from nearshoring.
Exactly. This would need to manifest in sustained high single-digit or maybe even low double-digit growth in passenger traffic, especially business travel, and importantly, cargo volumes at OMAM's northern industrial airports like Monterrey, Ciudad Juarez, Reynosa. A faster-than-anticipated expansion and lease-up of that Monterrey industrial park would provide a significant source of high-margin revenue surprise, far exceeding what's currently modeled by most analysts.
So nearshoring is absolutely central to the upside bull case. What else needs to click perfectly into place?
Flawless capital expenditure execution is also crucial. If those major expansion projects, especially the big ones at Monterrey, are delivered not only on budget but perhaps even ahead of schedule, and they lead to immediate absorption of that new capacity and unlock enhanced commercial opportunities quickly, then the return on that invested capital will be highly accretive, adding substantial value faster than anticipated. We also need to see sustained non-aeronautical outperformance. The bull case assumes that management continues to innovate and really outperform in this segment, not just by growing the industrial park, but by successfully increasing commercial revenue per passenger spending in shops, restaurants, parking at a rate significantly outpacing inflation, driving sustained EBITDA margin expansion over time.
And that regulatory elephant that's always in the room now, what's the optimistic scenario there that helps the bull case?
Right. A critical component, maybe the linchpin of the bull case, is a period of sustained regulatory stability. Specifically, a favorable or at least neutral outcome in the next MDP negotiation for the 2026-2030 period. An outcome that reaffirms the existing framework without further negative adjustments would significantly reduce the perceived political risk associated with OMAB and its peers.
And that could lead to a re-rating?
Potentially, yes. It could lead to a valuation re-rating for the stock, meaning investors might be willing to assign a higher valuation multiple, like EBITDA or PE, simply because the risk profile has fundamentally improved. And finally, putting it all together, stronger than expected free cash flow generation, resulting from all these positive factors aligning, would enable OMAP to potentially increase its dividend payments at a faster rate than anticipated, attracting a broader base of income-focused investors and driving demand for the shares, further boosting the price.
Okay, that's the roadmap for the bull case. Now, on the flip side, what are the key factors that could lead to a bear case scenario playing out and truly impair OMAM's value? What are the biggest potential threats that could derail this story?
Conversely, a number of factors could unfortunately lead to significant underperformance or value impairment. The most significant external threat, I believe, remains a severe macroeconomic hard landing, meaning a deep and prolonged recession, particularly in the United States, given the strong linkages, and wide door within Mexico itself.
How would that impact OMAB?
Well, it would likely sharply curtail business investment, dramatically slow down the pace of nearshoring investment flows, and depress demand for both business and leisure travel across the board. This could lead to flat or even declining passenger traffic for a period and a sharp fall in revenues and profits.
And that primary company-specific risk you highlighted earlier, the regulatory one, how does that manifest most damagingly in a potential bear case?
That's the adverse regulatory intervention scenario. And it remains the primary idiosyncratic or company-specific risk. The introduction of further negative regulatory changes by the Mexican government would almost certainly severely damage investor confidence and directly hit profitability. This could take the form of another hike in the concession fees, perhaps the imposition of direct price controls or caps on passenger fees, TUAs, or maybe overtly punitive terms being included in the next MDP negotiation. Any of these would directly erode profitability and likely trigger a valuation derating.
What about unforeseen competitive shifts, even though they're an oligopoly or other external shocks beyond a recession?
While direct competition between the airport groups themselves is relatively low, unforeseen events impacting the broader ecosystem could certainly disrupt traffic significantly. This could include something like a major financial failure or bankruptcy of a key airline partner, perhaps one of the major Mexican LCCs that feed so much traffic into their airports. That would lead to a sudden drop in routes and passengers.
That would hurt.
Definitely. Or perhaps a significant resurgence of security problems in northern Mexico that deters business travel and foreign investment. And of course, another unpredictable global shock akin to a pandemic that grounds air travel, even temporarily, would be devastating for the industry again. We also need to consider the currency risk in a bear case, sustained peso depreciation. A prolonged and significant weakening of the Mexican peso against the U.S. dollar would negatively impact financials by increasing the cost, in pesos, of any USD-denominated capital expenditures and debt service, thereby compressing margins and reducing net income reported in pesos.
And finally, just basic operational issues. What could go wrong there in a negative scenario? Yes, even without external shocks, internal execution matters. A failure to manage operating costs effectively, particularly things like labor costs or maintenance expenses, especially in a persistently inflationary environment, could lead to the erosion of OMAB's best-in-class EBITDA margins, even if revenue growth remains intact on the top line. It's really about maintaining that finely tuned operational efficiency that has been such a hallmark of their success so far. Slippage there could disappoint investors.
Okay, that's a very comprehensive look at both sides of the coin, the potential opportunities, and the significant pitfalls. For you, our listener, if you're tracking this story, if you find OMAB interesting, what are the key quantitative variables you should be watching most closely? Mm-hmm. What numbers are going to give you the clearest, quickest picture of how things are unfolding? Right, to effectively track the evolution of this investment thesis over time, you should really focus on a concise set of key performance indicators, or KPIs. Quantitatively, keep a very close eye on the monthly passenger traffic reports that OMA publishes. Pay particular attention to the breakdown between domestic and international traffic flows. And perhaps most importantly, how Monterrey's specific performance compares to the rest of the airport portfolio, as Monterrey is really the bellwether for that critical nearshoring impact.
So not just the total passenger number, but the composition and the performance of that key airport, Monterrey.
Precisely. Details matter there. Also, scrutinize the quarterly financial results when they come out. Track the growth rate of non-aeronautical revenue per passenger. Are they squeezing more dollars out of each person walking through? And crucially, track the specific revenue contribution from their diversification activities, especially those industrial services at Monterrey. That's a direct and immediate indicator of how the nearshoring impact is translating to their bottom line. Monitor the overall adjusted EBITDA margins closely for any signs of sustained compression, which could signal underlying cost control issues or perhaps the impact of adverse regulatory changes starting to bite. Compare the actual capital expenditures against the company's own guidance and their MDP commitments to ensure they're executing effectively on those ambitious investment plans. And finally, keep tracking the net debt to adjusted EBITDA ratio to ensure their leverage remains comfortably within that conservative range, especially while they're undergoing this period of significant CapEx.
Okay, those are the key numbers to watch. And beyond the numbers, what qualitative factors should listeners be paying close attention to? What news or commentary is most important?
Qualitatively, any regulatory announcements coming out of Mexico are paramount. Any statements or policy changes announced by Mexican authorities regarding airport concessions should be considered highly material and potentially market-moving. Watch for new route announcements by major airlines, particularly any new international routes to the U.S. being launched from OAM's airports, as these directly translate to future growth opportunities thanks to that Category 1 status. Keep an eye on broader nearshoring data specifically, trends in foreign direct investment, FDI, flowing into Mexico, particularly into those northern industrial states. That FDI data often acts as a leading indicator of future industrial activity and associated business travel demand. Finally, pay close attention to management commentary during their quarterly earnings calls and investor presentations. Listen carefully for insights regarding the progress of major capital projects, their outlook for the non-aeronautical businesses, and any shifts in their posture on future capital allocation priorities, especially regarding dividends.
This has been a truly fascinating deep dive into OMAB. It genuinely represents, as you said, a unique exposure to Mexico's industrial growth story, powered by nearshoring. But as we've explored in detail, it's definitely a story with distinct chapters of immense opportunity, driven by nearshoring and those regulatory upgrades, but also shadowed by significant challenges and risks, particularly around that unpredictable regulatory environment.
It's a really complex balance, isn't it? On one hand, you have a company with strong, arguably monopolistic assets in key regions, exceptionally high profitability, and clear, identifiable growth drivers stemming from powerful macroeconomic trends like nearshoring. On the other hand, the demonstrated willingness of the government to unilaterally alter long-term concession terms introduces a significant layer of risk that's profoundly difficult to quantify accurately and could resurface.
So for you, our listener, here's a final provocative thought to consider as we wrap up. Given the inherent unpredictability of governmental actions, especially as demonstrated in October 2023, how much of a risk premium are you personally willing to assign to a seemingly robust monopolistic infrastructure asset like OMAB operating in this specific context? And perhaps more subtly, what key signal or event would indicate to you that the market's current risk pricing for these types of assets in Mexico is no longer appropriate, either too high or too low? Think about how you might integrate this complex balance of potentially high growth and demonstrably high regulatory risk into your own frameworks for understanding and investing in global markets.
A truly critical question for anyone looking at infrastructure investments, especially in emerging markets today. There are no easy answers there.
Absolutely not. Thank you so much for joining us on this deep dive into OMAB and the Mexican aviation sector. Until next time, keep digging for those essential insights.